the series of 774 detainees in America's illegal prison, Stonehenge, Celebration and Subversion, and The Battle of the Beanfield. Andy's articles appear at his website, andyworthington.co.uk, where I found his latest, Ending Israel's Impunity for Genocide in Gaza and the Threat to Those Like Joe Biden Who Are Most Complicit. Welcome back to the program, Andy.
Thanks, Chris. Very lovely to be speaking to you again under even worse conditions than the last time we spoke, I'm sure.
We seem to be headlong down the crapper, as they say in academic circles. Well, Andy, in your article, you describe Israel's use of the Hamas attack of October 7th as a, quote, blatant and frankly sickening effort to erase 76 years of oppression. The sick-making effects of that effort, as described in Cook's expose on Sadeh Taiman I just mentioned, they're quite literal. I mean, in Sadeh Taiman, another Bagram or Gitmo or Britmo, or like Israel's prison system for Palestinians, as you describe, it is too uniquely brutal and lawless.
So the thing is, Chris, there's obviously overlaps with the CIA black sites and with Guantanamo, with Bagram and the other, you know, prisons that were on the ground in Afghanistan where people were, you know, first processed. I think it's important for us to remember one thing that the US was looking at when they were planning on setting up prisons outside the law after 9/11, where they could be free from the scrutiny of the courts and torture and abuse people. One of the things they were looking at was definitely the already existing Israeli prison system, which, you know, is separate from the prison system for Israelis and is a place where people are either held arbitrarily with, you know, no knowledge of when, if ever, they will be released, where they're held under administrative detention, which is where they're nominally charged with something, and it can be renewed every 6 months, and that can go on for years and years and years. You know, there are also places where people are killed. That was true before October the 7th. It seems to me, Chris, that horrible though the general Israeli prisons for Palestinians are, what's happened since October the 7th is that there's, you know, as Jonathan writes about, there's, you know, at least this facility where people apprehended in connection with the October 7th attacks. Now, whether they are actually apprehended in association with them or whether that's just what we're told. And also, I think in general, everyone who has been apprehended in Gaza, or certainly many of the people who've been apprehended in Gaza itself, have ended up in this kind of super brutal prison system, which to my mind almost defies anything that the Americans came up with after 9/11. You know, when you're hearing about a facility where people are strapped down and prevented from moving and prevented from speaking for, you know, what presumably in the cases of some of these people is now nearly 8 months. I don't recall anything happening quite like that. It's certainly not in Guantanamo. I mean, I'm now thinking, obviously, the CIA black sites with a very sterile, regimented torture program was really, you know, so horrific that it kind of stands on its own. But I think this sounds so shocking that it's quite hard to get your head around. I mean, I actually, Chris, saw some footage earlier this year. I think it came out maybe in January. And it was one of the Israeli TV channels bragging about what they were doing. And they actually, you know, allowed a film crew into one of these facilities where you know, a dozen men kneeling on the ground, suffering sensory deprivation, and, you know, and being prohibited from moving were being held. And, you know, and this was, as the cameras were there, this was obviously them treated as well as they were going to get treated. Because as soon as the cameras weren't there, who knows what would happen to these poor people? You know, clearly people are taken off, are beaten, are killed in numbers that we can't yet ascertain how many people have died, but it keeps happening. It's absolutely horrific.
Yeah, well, and even as they're more mass graves being dug up outside the medical facilities in Gaza that people managed to get back to during the lull, that according to Hamoked, this is a Israeli human rights group, they say that there is more than 13,000 people from Gaza that are missing, and they presume, they write, that they, and this is again in Jonathan Cook's sick-making article. I literally, this is the sickest thing I've ever read. They are believed to be in Israeli detention, men and women, mostly men. Cook writes about these prisoners being used for like lab rats, for medical experimentation, for interns and inexperienced surgeons to use as living subjects. They're kept hooded. They don't know what's going on. Sometimes these people are given anesthetic. Sometimes they're not. And you know, what really got me was I was thinking about the Palestinian surgeon, Dr. Adnan Al-Bursh, who was taken out of Al-Shifa, was killed, tortured to death, it's reported, but he was in this prison. And I started thinking about, well, can you imagine if this surgeon himself was put into this situation where he's being used as a test subject for surgeons that don't know what they're doing to practice their, to practice surgery on him. And here he is, a surgeon himself, knowing exactly what's happening to him. It's just, it's horrifying. I mean, this is, when I say Mengele, I'm not, this isn't hyperbole.
Well, I mean, I don't, you know, I don't know whether the extent to which experimentation is involved, but certainly unskilled doctors, possibly no use of anesthetics, and I would expect no use of anesthetics. That actually reminds me of, you know, what we haven't really heard about properly as part of the early days of the Guantanamo story, where people were having limbs cut off and teeth pulled out and all manner of things happening to them that, that, you know, the prisoners swear was not medically necessary. You know, and there's a whole history there of them being used as guinea pigs. Certainly they were given drugs that were, obviously they were being experimented on. And I think medically they were also subject to a similar type of thing. But, you know, I'm glad you mentioned Dr. Adnan Al-Bursh, because he's such a focal point for me when that story came out. This internationally renowned orthopedic surgeon who they held for 4 months and tortured to death. I don't know whether you've seen, Chris, but I've only seen one confession film, which was another high-ranking doctor in a hospital who they'd broken, and it was a patently false confession. This poor man was very reluctantly saying what he was told to say about Hamas.
This regards the basement of the hospitals being used as command centers by the Hamas military wing.
Well, they want all the hospitals to have been Hamas bases because, you know, we're into the brutality, the brutal mentality, the same as Guantanamo. You know, you round people up, no one's innocent. So therefore, if they don't tell you they're guilty, then you have to torture them. You know, the similarities are horribly, horribly eerie. But, you know, they've been doing this to doctors in facilities that clearly had nothing to do with Hamas, and torturing them horribly. And in the case of killing this man, you know, who was an absolute hero within Gaza's medical system, no grounds for any realistic suspicion that this man was who they said they was, that he was. And so what they've done is they've waged war on hospitals, which is profoundly illegal. And then they have taken the most prominent medical professionals working in the Gaza Strip, and they have tortured them to get them to confess to something that can't possibly be true. And they don't even care that in at least this one case, and I'm sure we're going to hear about more, because I think there are dozens and dozens and dozens of unaccounted for doctors and medical staff in these prisons. They killed him. How on earth is that acceptable? You know, we're just the Israelis are just inventing new war crimes, aren't they?
It brings to mind for me a Canadian doctor, Tarek Loubani. He's a Palestinian heritage. He's gone and done field medicine. He was during the Great March of Return in 2018. He was shot through both legs by snipers while, you know, in his hospital garb. And I talked to him some months ago in December, actually, about, and it just happened to be that I had seen a report about Dr. Hani Al-Haytham, Al-Shifa, that he was killed just a couple of days before I talked to Tarek. And I didn't realize that Tarek and he were very close friends. And he was killed not at the hospital, but in his home. He was identified by one of these systems, these computer AI systems, and killed with his entire family, five children, his wife, who was also a very prominent surgeon. But Tarek described this guy as being, he was a rough contemporary, like in his early 40s. And he said this guy was a superstar surgeon.
Yeah.
Like, and this is a doctor of some accomplishment himself, saying he could have left Gaza and gone to Switzerland or America or Canada or anywhere and done very well by himself, but he decided to stay and serve. And,
well, it's part of genocide, but you're absolutely not allowed to kill doctors. You're not allowed to target their homes. You're not allowed to take them from the hospital they were working in, take them to torture prisons, torture them and kill them. I mean, all of it is so beyond anything that I've ever heard, I think, to be honest, Chris. I mean, we're in the darkest fringes of territory throughout history that, you know, I'm sure we didn't think we would be seeing again like this. It's almost beyond comprehension. I mean, as soon as you start talking about it, it's like, is this real? I'm actually talking about something that's real. And you and I know that if somebody said, talk to me, I've just been off the planet, I've come back, talk to me about what's been happening for the last nearly 8 months in Gaza, I could talk for half a day about it. Yeah. About atrocity after atrocity after atrocity after atrocity. Unbelievable.
Well, I've been talking about it for 25 years on this program, and it's gotten worse and worse and worse. Again, your article is ending Israel's impunity for genocide in Gaza and the threat to those like Joe Biden, who are most complicit, at Andy's website, andyworthington.co.uk. But I'm gonna, you know, when I mentioned the 2018 March, that seemed to be the epitome of the horror of impunity to me, where Tarek Loubani was shot through both legs, but not only him. Hundreds and hundreds of Palestinians were picked off by snipers, Israeli snipers. And yet, where is the outrage? And now it's led to this place where we are, this poisonous impunity.
Yeah, absolutely, Chris. It has. But at the same time, you know, I think everyone was taken by surprise by the scale of this, because, you know, those of us who were paying close attention could tell within the first week. This was, you know, in 2014, it lasted for 7 weeks. They killed over 2,000 people. They destroyed hundreds and hundreds of buildings. They'd already done that within the first week, and there was no sign of stopping. And then all of the open calls for genocide and all of the stirred up support for Israel's right to defend itself. Nothing ever like this. And, you know, for it still to be ongoing is such an indictment of our countries. And, of course, you know, the United States leading the way, but we're all complicit in this. You know, and the most recent article I wrote, Chris, was you know, to look at the efforts of the international community to see whether there is any possibility that people will be held accountable one day, or whether what we are seeing is in defense of a genocide. You know, Israel, with the support of Western countries, who have bizarrely, really, put Israel's right to commit genocide above the interests of their own countries, you know, whether international law will be completely destroyed as a result of this. I was very pleased that Karim Khan, you know, eventually announced his intention to issue arrest warrants for Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant and three Hamas leaders, you know, because he had been silent up till now, because the ICC had been silent for so many years. And then, you know, of course, yesterday, you know, a big story comes out about how the previous chief, the previous prosecutor of the International Criminal Court was actually directly threatened by the head of Mossad. I mean, threatened in a good old fashioned mafia way of you want to back off or we're coming for your family.
Yeah, it'd be a shame if something happened to that storefront of yours.
Yeah.
Listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking with Andy Worthington. Andy's an English journalist and activist. He's an author, photo historian, filmmaker, musician, songwriter, and principal of the Four Fathers Band. His website is andyworthington.co.uk. And that's where I found his recent article, the one we're talking around right now, Ending Israel's Impunity for Genocide in Gaza and the Threat to Those Like Joe Biden Who Are Most Complicit. Andy, you've got a huge picture of Karim Khan, the lead prosecutor for the International Criminal Court at the on the article there. I'm wondering, though, he's known as being pretty much a servant of power, a toady to empire, if you will. As you say, he's been silent for years and years and years. I'm wondering if now the ICC isn't being used as a distraction from the more legitimate, or at least the more broadly recognized international legal forum, the International Court of Justice, and they have been bringing down orders, trying to end this impunity. What do you think of my conspiracy theory that the ICC is just a stalking horse in all of this?
I don't actually think so, Chris. I think international human rights lawyers must have been frantically talking to themselves over the last 7.5 months about what, if anything, can be done. And, you know, we can see certainly from the ICJ that the quality of people that South Africa got for its case was, you know, was pretty formidable. And the, you know, the problem for the ICJ is that it's going to take until, you know, they reach this definitive conclusion, I'm sure, that Israel has been engaged in the most monstrous genocide. We don't have time for that. What the ICC has been able to do on the basis of its legal advice is to suggest that they're going to issue these arrest warrants, which kind of cranks up the guilt, if you like. But again, you know, there's no apprehension clause in any of international law to enable this to happen. You know, were it to happen, I don't know whether everyone realizes this, Chris, but, you know, way back in the midst of time, sometime around 2010, 2011, I think, George W. Bush was told that if he went to Switzerland, as he was intending to, he was going to be arrested for breaking the torture convention. And as far as I know, not only George W. Bush, but other senior members of his administration have never traveled abroad ever since. So, you know, that would be bad for Netanyahu and Gallant, wouldn't it, if they could never go abroad again? But it's how we stop this that, of course, is missing from the picture. So I do think both of these bodies are kind of both trying to work out how to get to the point that we need to be at. And I suppose the bigger problem that we have, given that both these bodies work on glacially slow timelines, because, you know, gathering legal evidence properly isn't something you can do at a drop of a hat. You know, the problem that's being highlighted is the UN Security Council, a veto that is brandished only by the five victors of the Second World War, who gave themselves this special power. And, you know, and have been, in America's case, been using it also to defend Israel for all this time, because with the exception of Russia and China, who to the West's horror are part of the Security Council, the rest of it is the cozy colonial murderers club. They had no intention that any of their own would ever be held accountable for the myriad crimes conducted by our countries over the last 60 years, 70 years. And they included Israel in the ambit of their countries that were to be protected. So that is why I think that what Karim Khan has done is significant. And I also think, Chris, I think he's scared. I've seen him recently, and if I was him, I would be scared, because he's taken on the mafia.
Well, from one cozy colonial homicidal maniac country to another. Here in Canada, the government has been very cagey on whether or not it will honor ICC orders that it do arrest Israel. Well, at least they've only named these two individuals in Israel, which in itself is kind of ridiculous to me, but it's happening, I suppose.
Yeah.
What about in Britain? Has the English government the British government, have they made comment about this ICC ruling and whether or not they or it will honor the order to arrest Netanyahu should he show up?
No, I think they didn't go as berserk as the Americans did, but they kind of deplored it somehow. They didn't think it was appropriate. America rules Britain. Britain isn't going to rock any boats, you know, not just because of our historic complicity and responsibility for all of this, but because that's our place in the world, is just clinging to America's leg now. So, no, I mean, Britain's very high up on the list of countries that are doing as little as possible.
It is signatory. Forgive my ignorance, but is Britain a signatory to the ICC?
I think it is. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I thought that was, you know, if you're a signatory, then you know you're bound. Otherwise, what Karim Khan will give you a stern looking at, or
well, I think that's why they just regretted it, rather than, you know, rather than the much more alarming thing that the Americans seem to be doing in Congress, which appears to be suggesting that the ICC is some kind of direct threat to American values.
Well, they said that during Bush's
America,
time.
America is lost, Chris, isn't it?
well, they brought down some legislation, if I remember now, like in that period that you're talking about, when the orders against Bush came down, that should there be an arrest by the ICC, that they would attack The Hague. And this was like the, I don't know what the bill was called, the America Will Attack The Hague bill, yeah, in response.
Yeah, I mean, I have to laugh. It's so it's so ridiculous, and I don't know how this is going to. I don't know how this is going to end for America. Obviously, I mean, it's absurd to me. I mean, you know, since we last spoke, of course, little Rishi Sunak has announced a general election here and done it at short notice. And you know, things are up for grabs in this country. I think it's quite interesting. I mean, I think genocide-supporting Labour MPs are going to have the spotlight on them. And I think it's interesting that there are going to be independent MPs and MPs of smaller parties that I think can genuinely challenge them. And then you look across the water to the people who are leading this, and you look at the almost complete ownership of Congress by AIPAC and other Jewish lobbying organizations, and what hope is there for the United States? You know, the best that I've been seeing is, you know, is students rising up, calling for divestment, they're absolutely appropriately. I'm waiting for them to hook up with the climate activists now, so that it's like, yeah, don't just divest from arms companies and people investing in Israel. You need to also fight to get divestments from the fossil fuel companies. And you guys are on your own now. Go for it. You're young. There is no future. You're going to have to take this all down, because you know your choice is between a 77-year-old lunatic and an 82-year-old man whose brain is melting, who are both absolutely wedded to the Israeli cause. What can be done about it?
Well, we're in the same boat in this country. An election is going to happen at some point, but we had the leadership on all corners, is supporting entirely Israel. In the States, it's the same. You look at Australia, any of the Five Eyes countries, or Western civilization, and in Europe too. It's we're put into this corner where we're deciding between two groups of corrupted representatives that can blithely turn a blind eye to what's going on, which is the most grim form a case of genocide since the Second War. I wonder, though, it's going to come back to haunt us. What we allow Israel do with impunity over there will be visited upon us at some point as well.
Nobody's safe if we allow this to happen. Repression has already started on dissent in Western countries. I don't know. I mean, you were just talking then, Chris, and as I do so much of the time, I was just struggling to comprehend how it is that such a visible genocide in which we are so complicit is something that doesn't trouble these people. I did not think I would see this day. It's like we all suddenly got transported back to the 1900s and we're in King Leopold's Congo. I mean,
1900s, I think it's like we're back in some kind of prehistoric time when people hadn't developed that part of the brain. Andy, we're fast out of time. Again, Andy's article is Ending Israel's Impunity for Genocide in Gaza and the Threat to Those Like Joe Biden, Who Are Most Complicit. I think the complicity is far outstretches that. You can find it at andyworthington.co.uk. Thanks a lot, Andy, for coming on again and depressing our listeners.
Well, what can we do, Chris? We have to talk about it. I think that's the main thing. The difficulty, of course, is that so many people don't want to listen. And I understand it's hard to stare into the horror. But, anyone who has the strength to do so has to. We have to face this. We have to not give up on the Palestinians. And we have to hope that we can find a way out.
And I think we have to remember, too, that Israel is a mirror and what it's revealing is us. I'd like to also thank Eve Angler, eveangler.com. Go to his website to check out his latest writings. They're always good. And remember, he's on tour coming out this way very soon in early June through mid-June and then out to the prairies. Thanks again, Andy, for coming on, eh?
Thanks, Chris. Always a pleasure. Until the next time. Thank you.
All right. Cheerio.
Bye.
Adios.
Khalid Qasim was barely a man when he was sent to Afghanistan. Sent to help the Taliban win for sure in a long running into Muslim civil war. Then came 9/11, he suddenly became a terrorist against the USA. Tried to get to Pakistan to get home, was seized and sold and sent to Guantanamo. Forever prisoner of the USA. Stuck in Guantanamo with all his hope taken away. Forever prisoner of the Biden regime. Charge a child, what could be more obscene in Guantanamo? Like others wouldn't do what he was told. A hunger striker and a leader of men. His quest for justice led to punishment. When it comes down to setting him free, they say he's still a threat to their security. He's left wondering, wondering when he'll ever be a free man again. Forever prisoner of the USA. Stuck in Grand Dynamo with all his hope taken away.